It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. We're going to talk about those new Surfaces. Paul is more excited about this announcement than I've seen him in a long, long time. He says he hasn't been this excited since Windows Phone. Oh, dear. Well, Mary Jo's got her review of the HP Envy X2, the first Windows on ARM device. We'll talk about the next version of Windows, Redstone 5, some nice new features. And well, we got picks of the week, beer, the usual. Windows Weekly, it's coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 570, recorded Wednesday, May 16th, 2018. Flickrgate. Windows Weekly is brought to you by 23andMe, a personal genetics service helping people understand their DNA. Buy your 23andMe kit today at 23andMe.com/twit. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at RocketMortgage.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover your latest and greatest from the boys in Redmond.
And the gals.
And the gals.
Yes.
Here they are. Mr. Paul Thurrott of Thurrott.com, Mary Jo Foley of AllAboutMicrosoft.com are your hosts for today's voyage.
Sorry, everybody.
They're back. Where are you? Actually, they're not back. Where are you, Paul? You're in a curtain
room. What do you mean, Leo?
Where, you're not home.
I am in Chicago at the Marriott Marquis, right next to the McCormick Center Conventions, whatever it's called. I don't know. This
actually,
gigantic
I should know
facility.
That because I saw your Instagrams.
I had the depressing realization today because you walk about a mile from the hotel into the convention center to where the show floor is. It feels like a mile. And you never go outside. And over the 4 days that I will be here, unless I force the issue, I will literally never go outside.
What is the show that you're going to?
It's called VeeamON.
VeeamON?
Mm-hmm.
What the heck's that?
Veeam is a enterprise software solutions company, backup and management and all kinds of other awesome stuff. Nice. And they originally, I think the name derives from VMware, because when they first started, they were servicing virtual storage and virtual machines and so forth.
I apologize for your morphing lower third, because I had you guys still in Seattle, and I have to...
Oh, no, I wish I was still in Seattle in some ways.
Well,
I wish I could see the outside.
Paul, it's so sad.
I know, it was depressing just to think of it. I had already been here 2 days, you know, and it's like, wait a minute.
Well, you missed the big thunder activity, the thunderstorm.
No, I didn't. That's what delayed me getting to Chicago by 3.5 hours on Monday.
Wow, I see. We had it last night here. Ooh, it was big.
So let's see, episode 570, and we're back from Build. Do you have any thoughts? Any last thoughts now that Build is in the rear view mirror, or you want to save that? I see it's way down at the bottom.
It's in there, but we can talk about it.
Let's save it. Because everybody's so excited about the new Surface 2 Hub, available sometime next year.
Yep.
It was kind of a weak product announcement. Excuse me for saying that. But it didn't really say much about... I mean,
I think there's a rationale behind the way they did it.
Why are they even mentioning it now? It's not even out yet.
Actually, I think we can explain that.
Okay, please do.
We can.
Please do. That's what you're here for. It's your job is to make things...
I knew I was here for some reason.
Your job, make things clear for Leo.
What are we doing again?
Windows Weekly.
What show is this?
What's going on? Is this real life?
So if you think about a Surface Hub as it exists, it's a very expensive mm-hmm. enterprise product. Yes. And I mean, like the cheaper of the two models is like $8,000 or $9,000. And the more expensive one is like $22,000 for the 84 inch. So this isn't a product like that somebody goes into a Best Buy and goes, hey, let me buy one of those, right? It's a product that has a really long sales cycle. Like people have to go in and kick the tires and get approvals from their managers and get it put into the corporate budget. So I think that is why Microsoft announced it the way they did this week. It's like, let's tease the customers a little bit and show them what we have been working on and get them to start thinking about buying one of these. And then, you know, starting this summer, we'll tell them a little more, let them start seeing it by end of year in a private preview, and then they can make the decision to buy.
There's also the issue that Surface Hub has been on the market now for what, over a year, 2 years?
Two years.
So, In addition to that long buying cycle, which is very real, the product has never been able to meet demand. You know, the supply has never been there to meet the demand. So there's a long waiting list. And when you have to kind of give these companies guidance. I mean, like she said, these are very expensive products. And when you understand what's coming in the future, that may impact your buying decisions, because the Surface Hubs that we have today are very specific, and they're not particularly mobile, although you can put them on carts and cart them around. The big one in particular, a lot of companies had to reinforce walls just to hang them up on a wall. Mm-hmm. But it creates this kind of situation that's analogous to a desktop PC, where you have to go to a certain place for the most part to use one of them. And for the second generation, they're changing that pretty dramatically. You can still have a place for those devices, of course, but they're a lot more mobile. They're lighter. Mm-hmm. They can be attached together in unique ways, which is really cool. And I think what they're really trying to do is just be transparent about what's coming and when, and that will help those companies make a buying decision. Not to mention the fact that the expected lower pricing, we don't know what the pricing is going to end. Certainly Microsoft's goals for the device is to open it up to far more types of businesses. Surface Hubs today really just speak to kind of a small group of giant enterprises that have these on-site facilities where they have meeting spaces and so forth, and rooms that you can check out through Exchange and so forth. This type of device is going to open up the market pretty dramatically to smaller businesses, right? So it could be more of a mainstream, is not the right success, the right word, but a mainstream-ish kind of success, if you will, you know, compared to Surface.
What price are we talking?
Well, we have no idea.
No.
None. So you know what they said, which is, it's very tricky. Again, they said it's going to be priced comparably with competitive devices. But what's a competitive device to this? I mean, people immediately think Jamboard, but I don't think this really competes with Jamboard.
That's the Google.
From Google.
The Google thing.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Although, I'm trying to orient this, sorry. That's the only thing you could possibly say. And so one of the things that's interesting about Jamboard, of course, is that it's a lot less expensive than today's Surface devices. And the hope is that these new Surface Hubs will be less expensive than the current one.
Do you think they will, though? Because I can't help but be a little skeptical on that, because if you look at these new Surface Hubs, they're amazing. And, you know, they're really high-end devices, right? And so I think some people could be very disappointed if they think, oh, they're going to drop this to $4,000 to match Google Jambox, right? And I if you remember, when they did Surface Hub 1, they announced a set of pricing, and then the devices were delayed, and then they jacked up the price before they started selling them by quite a bit of money. So, I guess I'm being a skeptic on this, because I'm like, is it really going to be for a more of a mainstream and more of a business?
Mary Jo, I think I speak on behalf of everyone when I say I'm tired of your negativity.
we should talk about this, because Paul, like when we get pre-briefed on this, Paul was so excited. He was like, I couldn't see him, but I could imagine him jumping up and down in his chair. He said to me, this is like amazing. Aren't you excited? And I'm like, yeah, I guess I'm excited. And he's like, no, you have to be excited. I was like, okay, wow.
Well, okay. I mean,
What was it that got you so excited?
Well, yeah. So they had sent the video to us ahead of the briefings that we had. And I didn't have a chance. I was traveling Monday, and that's when I saw that. Yeah. So I didn't have a chance to even look at this until literally 5 minutes before the briefing.
Yeah.
So I watched this video, and of course it starts like a surface video. It's at least internal components, whatever. But you know what? The reason this is exciting is because I genuinely feel that this is going to make this device more accessible than the previous Surface Hubs. And I mean that in the broadest sense possible. I think it's going to be more accessible to more businesses, like I said. I do think it's going to be cheaper.
The portrait mode is nice.
It's not going to be cheap, but it will be cheaper. That thing where she's doing with her finger, by the way, is very important. And we'll get to that in a moment.
How many times have I said that?
Okay. Yeah. Zero wig, ladies.
She pressed a button on the left that was next to her.
She pressed a fingerprint reader on the
side. That was a fingerprint reader.
So that's a major difference, but we'll get to that in a second.
Okay. By the way, it's so funny because my dream when we had, when we said we were going to do Skype for the shows, I asked my engineers to create a portrait mode avatar. Yeah. Because that's how people are, right? They're upright. And
one uses a computer in portrait mode.
No.
Really. And no one, Skype doesn't really have a portrait mode.
It wasn't practical. It was a very difficult, we could have done it, but it was a difficult, expensive thing to do. Yeah.
So in addition to being more, accessible to businesses, there's also an accessibility angle to this, which unlike some of Microsoft's accessibility stuff is very real. And that means because this thing is so much lighter and so much more portable and doesn't need to be on a reinforced wall, it will have all kinds of steel case carts and things for these things. Someone in a wheelchair can use this device, can wheel up to it, and the thing can go up and down and around.
This actually looks really cool.
Yes,
and the way you can mix four together, they're showing right now with
right.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, so you can have four of them together in portrait mode or two in landscape mode. They support 4K cameras. The screen resolution, we don't exactly know, but it's 4K plus. That's a look at the steel case, one of the steel case stands for it. I've been doing this for a long time, and Mary Jo has too. I can, and I did in an article, point to the handful of times I've kind of been this blown away by something that Microsoft did. There aren't that many of them, right? The last one for me was Windows Phone. And as originally announced, the original vision for that thing, it was very exciting because Microsoft was not copying what Apple did with the iPhone like Android did. It was really kind of rethinking the smartphone and trying to center it around people that, instead of around apps and, rethinking how this thing could work. And I thought that was very exciting. Obviously, that thing cratered and I'm an idiot. But that thing was very exciting at the time. And this has that same sense of possibility, that same sense that you're seeing that the future is changing, that the original Surface Hub was very, cool when you see it in person, and it's amazing, but the pricing puts it out of your brain because you're never going to get one. So,
I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, well, it's great, but $25,000, I don't think I'll be buying four.
Yeah, but if this thing was $5,000, and
is different. In fact, $5,000, then I'd think about it for avatars for our shows. I mean, I could totally justify $5,000.
There's also, it's goofy. I'm not used to talking this positively about anything, but there's like a.
I don't recognize you, Paul.
Who are you?
It's uncomfortable for me. Let me just get through this. No, it's there. Microsoft is almost single-handedly justifying their entire hardware initiative. Like, this thing is legitimately exciting. Surface devices or PCs are excellent. There's no doubt about it. But they're not, they're PCs. It's not like we can't pretend otherwise. It's a high-end, really nice PC. This thing is something completely different. It's exciting. I mean, I don't know. I'm just going to cry. it's really nice.
I'm telling you, it was like I couldn't believe it. I'm like, are you as pumped as Panos Panay about this? And he's like, I'm more pumped than Panos.
I don't just get pumped at everything, right? Look, here's a new mouse. I'm so pumped.
I agree.
I am pumped about this. This is really exciting.
You know why I'm not as pumped as you? I'm scared the pricing isn't going to be $5,000.
It really does come. It really does come down to pricing. I think you're exactly right. Yeah.
Well, but again, all it has to do is be lower, and the 55 inch Surface Hub today is like $8,000 or $9,000.
$9,000.
Most of the cars I've owned have cost less than that.
Are these pictures that size, or are they setting up an expectation? Is that the 70-inch? What is that?
So, no, there's only one size.
Oh, there's only one size. Oh, all right.
But we should be very clear. We have not seen this in person, and I don't know if anybody in the press has.
I don't think the only ones who might have. I actually don't think this is real right now.
I think that's... Well, they told me they're still building it.
Is it based on the Pixel Perfect displays that they bought? It's the same thing, right?
This is a 50.5-inch display. It's 3x2. I'm sorry, Mary Jo. I didn't mean to...
No, go ahead. So we know these are the specs. We know it. Each one weighs between 50 and 77 pounds, right? That's how much those are going to weigh.
Kilograms.
Kilograms.
Oh, that's a big difference. That's 110 pounds. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If it's two.
Because when I did the calculation, I thought it was 50 to 77 pounds. Based on 25, that would be a lot different.
Yeah.
No. Sorry. I wasn't listening to the number you said. I was just listening to the pounds. Yeah. Whatever the they gave us a figure in kilograms, which was 50 to 75, 25 to 30.
Oh, okay. All right. There you go.
I'll get there. 25 to 30.
30 is 66 pounds. So
it's like somewhere in the 50 to 70 plus.
That's still pretty heavy, by the way.
It's pretty heavy, but how much does the current Surface Hub weigh? It's a lot heavier than that, right?
I don't know. How much does a Volkswagen weigh? It's about that much.
All right. So we don't know how much it's going to cost. We know that it's going to have Microsoft Teams at its center and a variant of Windows 10, you know, something like they have now running the Surface Hub. We know it's going to be able to do this thing they're calling dynamic collaboration, which means multiple users can authenticate into a single workspace and all work together simultaneously and then save the document that they're working on to the cloud so that everybody can access it.
And that's the fingerprint bit I kind of pointed out because the Surface Hub today is kind of a weird device. It's just kind of it's public. I mean, there is no sense of you signing in, right? You work there for a little while. You can do certain things with it and then you walk away and it all just disappears. And now you're going to have this authentication thing where you actually sign in. But was it called dual or multiple authentication?
Multiple user. Yeah, multiple.
Yeah, so this suggests that two of us or three of us or whatever could walk up to this thing, press our fingers, and we gain access to all of our stuff. And then we can collaborate in real time on the device or with someone else remotely as well.
Right. What else? So there have been rumors that this Surface Hub 2 would be one of the first devices built on the new Windows Core operating system in these composable shells. When I asked Microsoft about that, they immediately clammed up and were like, not talking about that. Not talking about that.
That's another part of it. Sorry, the timing thing. I think this is almost certainly tied to, maybe not even the next version of Windows. It could be the one after that because of the timing. Good. Right. So, you know, they need time to even figure out what that means and what that looks like. And so I think that's part of the reason why we're not standing in front of a physical device playing with it, right? That it's still, I don't mean to say in concept stage, but it's clearly not ready. Yeah. It's not something, you know, when we saw the original Surface Hub, it was kind of there in prototype form at least. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're at that stage yet.
Yeah, all they'll say is they're building it. They're still building it. And here's another interesting tidbit. Almost every other hinge of recent Surface devices has leaked because of patents. The hinge on this is amazing. Yeah. It lets you rotate it the way you saw in the video from portrait to landscape mode, but it also lets you stop on a dime, supposedly. So if you had it like at a set angle or you wanted to make it stop at an exact time, it can. And there's a really cool hinge that makes that happen, but that never leaked as far as we know in a patent. So that also is kind of interesting timing-wise, right? Because you would think if this was near done, we would have seen that hinge show up somewhere.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You just saw a timeline. They were showing timeline. You can pick out little things in this video, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure you've been dissecting it like crazy.
We have.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that part of the video where she's talking to somebody in portrait mode.
All right, so that was a finger. That's Windows Hello. She puts her finger on it. It says, "Oh, it's you."
Mm-hmm. So there she is. Yep.
There she is.
Mm-hmm. But you know, it enables what they called a life-size video call, right? Mm-hmm. So that you're standing in front of this screen.
That's really
and the
neat. I like that.
It really, yeah. It's really cool.
Yeah. I know. That would be cool to be able to be, you know, people were like, oh, if Skype for Business is around that long. Guys, Skype for Business is becoming Teams. This is going to be there.
Yeah. There's the pivot. Boy, you know what? I could see them selling a lot of these if they get the price right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And even if not, I mean, it sounds like they've sold Surface Hub 1 like crazy, right? That's sold very well.
They say they've sold Surface Hub 1 to 5,000 customers, but we don't know how many they sold because a lot of those buys were multiple devices, right. Like sometimes even bulk orders of devices.
Yeah, really big companies are buying a bunch of those things somehow. And it's interesting, but this device, like I said, I think will be more accessible, more applicable to different scenarios than the original Surface Hub. They can be mixed and matched, too. I think that's also part of the transparency here. You might have situations where you have certain rooms where you do want a big device on the wall all the time, but you might have smaller rooms or other team facilities where you want to cart these things around and have the smaller ones. And we don't know what this means exactly yet, but Microsoft did tell us that they're going to try to port as much of the unique Surface Hub 2 functionality as they can back to the original Surface Hub. And I think the rationale for that isn't just the obvious, but it's also so these things can interoperate. You can combine them in some way, perhaps.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah. I'm intrigued, too.
I agree.
I definitely am intrigued.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just made my short list.
You have a list?
I do have a list. The only things that Microsoft ever did that made a damn, you know, or, you know, like there aren't that many. And this is on the list.
And is this Panos' new thing? This is going to be his baby?
One of them. Yeah, he's chief product officer now, but, you know, he still runs Surface. So this is going to be one of the major new Surface launches for 2018, 2019.
And speaking of Surface, there's some other rumors that we might want to talk about. Let's take a break, and then we'll get to those.
I'm going to change my diapers.
I'm glad you're wearing them. Thank goodness you had them on. Our show today brought to you by 23andMe. This has now become a big family thing in our family. I did 23andMe when they first came out. It's a genetic analysis kit. At the time, it was remarkable because before 23andMe emerged, it cost tens of thousands of dollars to get your genome done. It was really only available to a special few. I'd applied to the Personal Genome Project and begged and pleaded to have the right to spend, I think it was $15,000 to get my genome scanned. Never did get accepted into that program. Then comes 23andMe. All I have to do is spit into a vial, and boom, I'm done. This was a revolution, and it's getting better and better all the time. In fact, so much so that now I sent a kit for Christmas to my mom and my sister. Lisa's done it. My wife, she just got it for her mom and dad. My dad's done it. Everybody I know we're all the cool kids are doing it. 23andMe. It's a personal genetic service that helps you understand what makes you you, what those 23 pairs of chromosomes, one from mom, one from dad, do combined to make you you. It's fascinating to find out what's in there, not only your ancestry, where your people came from 100, 200, 300 years ago, where your kind of deep ancestry came from thousands, tens of thousands of years ago. I can follow the migration path of my ancestry from Central Africa up through the Middle East into Europe over 150,000 years. And it's all because I got that little 23andMe kit a few years ago. I just spit into a little vial. Within 6 to 8 weeks, you get 75 plus online reports, not just ancestry, wellness stuff too, traits, carrier status reports. You can also use the DNA relative finder to find long-lost relatives, with their permission, of course. Privacy is very important to 23andMe. You don't have to worry about that. Buy your 23andMe kit today. Go to 23andMe.com/twit, 23andMe.com/twit. And honestly, it's best if you get everybody to do it, because then you share your data, and you can find, I mean, it all kind of meshes together. I found out I had 4% Neanderthal, but I celebrate it. I celebrate it. I think you'll want to know. Isn't it fun? Isn't it fascinating? It's the best book in the world, the book of you. 23andMe.com/twit. We thank them for their support of Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, talking about the latest from Microsoft. Is this a rumor or is this fact? A new like new Surface products.
This comes from a Bloomberg story.
Usually
by Mark Gurman.
He's pretty good.
Right? Dina Bass.
And Dina Bass. So I give it a lot of credence. Plus, I didn't talk to Paul about this, but I also got a tip about this same thing a couple weeks ago that Microsoft was building.
You keep things from me?
I did. I kept it from you. You know why? Because when I got tipped on it, I'm like, I don't think this tip is real. Oh. Because it sounds wrong. It's okay. Microsoft's going to build.
What is it? Yeah. Because why is
Microsoft's going to build a Surface device or a line of Surface devices that are low end using lower powered Intel processors that are going to cost around $400. Okay. Remember what happened with Surface RT?
Yeah.
They had to Surface take a $900 million write down on that thing.
Sure.
I kind of thought after that they were out of the low-end market until I then heard from somebody who said they saw this thing. And I'm like, wait, it exists? It's real? It's like a Surface tablet that's going to be like $399 and it already has been built? And the person said yes, but I was so bored by it, I didn't even like look into it. I was like, gosh,
again,
can you go back?
The negativity is just,
wow.
Right. All right, so
they have a lot of details, and it sounds this thing sounds plausible to me.
What's the market? Who is it? One of the reasons I thought Microsoft didn't want to do this is because they didn't want to scare the OEMs. They wanted to leave some oxygen in the room for the other manufacturers.
Yeah, screw those guys. No, I bet this is an education play. That's just a guess. But you know, Apple has a $329 iPad. I think it's $299 for education.
Yep.
A school would have to be out of its collective wits to ever buy such a device for students. But it's there, and there
it's
are
not
low end
iPad. They're worried about it's Chromebooks, right?
I think it's both, right? So okay. In other words, they did this big education push last year. They've kind of kept the momentum going. But what we don't have is a first party, you know, Microsoft branded device for education that makes any sense. They carted out Surface Laptop for some reason last year, but no one is spending $1,000 or more per student for a laptop. $400, you know, it gets it into the ballpark. And
except $400 with no pen, no keyboard. So if you want a keyboard case for this, add $150, $160, right? So that's why I'm like, is this really for education? Maybe it's for, you know, not K through 12, maybe for a little higher market end market than that. I don't know. I just was like, okay, maybe education. And you can bet whatever this is for, what it's going to come preloaded with is Microsoft 365, right? So there'll be some version of Windows.
Sure.
Bloomberg said Windows 10 Pro, Office 365, Intune. You know, there's an Intune for education, so they could make that bundle available. And maybe that's the way they sell this, is it only comes with Microsoft 365, and you have to take the bundle to get.
Yeah, I was wondering if it might be, Leo raised the issue of the partners. I mean, maybe if it's an education-only device. Microsoft doesn't do that now, but other companies do.
Yeah,
true.
There's no reason they couldn't do that.
It's true. The other guess I had on it, it may be, what if it's for first line workers, right? You know, the customer service people, you put Microsoft 365 F1, which is the first line worker plan on the thing. And you're like, hey, this is what you give to your salespeople who are front of the house in a restaurant, you know, those kind of jobs, taking people into a hospital and checking them in. Maybe this is the device for that.
In that scenario, a keyboard and a pen would not be needed, right? That would be something you'd be standing there holding as a tablet, and you would interact with your finger.
Yeah.
It's possible. I mean,
you'd still want to cover the thing, though, right? You wouldn't want to have no case on the thing, would you?
Well, I mean, opinions vary on that. But, yeah, sure. I'm sure there'll be ruggedized cases and, you know, whatever. Yeah. Because, you know, people will use them on factory floors and so forth. You know, the screen's small. When you think
10-inch. We're talking like 10-inch screen. Yeah.
Yeah. So, to me, that's okay for an entertainment device like an iPad. Windows just doesn't have the ecosystem for that, really. It's okay for kids because the screen's small. and they can still see such things. This thing would be like a postage stamp to me. I would hate to use this device. And it's okay for these vertical markets that you're talking about, right? Retail, whatever, factory floor, where you'd use it as a tablet. I mean, it's a good size for a tablet.
So one person
specifically called a tablet too. Sorry,
it was. You're right. One person described it to me as Intel Core M based, 4 gigs of RAM, 64 gigs of storage. Like, this is a pretty low end device, right? And I've had so many people say, why aren't they making this an ARM based device? Well, for one thing, software, right? Because I can't imagine emulation on a device that, like I just described. I don't know how that would work. Probably not well. And also, if you think about how Microsoft does Surface devices, this has been in the pipeline for a while, right? They don't just suddenly, you know, 6 months ago go, hey, let's build a $400 tablet. This has been something they've been thinking about for a while. So that also would explain why it would be Intel, not ARM, to me.
Yeah. I mean, why they would just have one of each, I don't know. And who knows? Maybe there might be
a
Qualcomm version, you know, whatever. But you're right. The performance would be even worse on Qualcomm today, you know, on the 835. And I'm a little, I don't know, this USB-C for charging, which is interesting on the surface of things, pardon the pun, but it's not something they've not done before. Surface 3, remember, had a micro USB charger, not the normal Surface connector. It's not it's not going to be Thunderbolt 3. You wouldn't get that on a low-end device anyway. It's not like you're going to be stringing multiple 4K displays off of it. It's, I mean, it has all the makings of a really kind of vertical device. I mean, it just doesn't seem like this isn't the, you know, person goes into the Microsoft store and really wants to get a Surface Pro, but they can't quite afford it. And so they buy this little tiny thing. I mean, it's not, it can't be for that purpose. It has to be for very specific markets.
The part in the Bloomberg report that worried me the most was they said it will be somewhat lighter than existing Surface devices, but with 4 hours less battery life. So I know some people have good luck with the Surface Pro battery. I myself have never had good luck with it. I think I've gotten 6 hours max out of a Surface Pro battery. So if it's 4 hours fewer in real life than that, that's not great. And I've had people defend it saying, you know, if this is for education or a first line worker, they're not like you guys. They don't need it to be on battery all the time. Yes, they do need it to be.
They don't need quality. They're not like you guys.
No, it was like, there's going to be outlets so everywhere. Dismissive. I'm like, where?
Well, you're a first line.
They're not blogger elite like anything. You guys. Traipsing around the world in your Learjets.
They don't need notepad.
Fair enough.
Right.
Well,
so, I don't know. I just was, when I heard about this, do you see why I was so skeptical now? Like when I heard about this, I was like,
I do. And now that I learn you're keeping secrets from me, I think we're going to have a conversation on the side.
I know some other things I haven't told you too about Surface, but I'm keeping those also. Not to try to scoop you, but just things I'm like, huh?
Well, you probably, both of you get tips that are really
We
bogus.
Do.
Yeah.
We do.
You can't, and you know, I don't know who, you know, we all have sources who we trust, obviously. Yeah. And then sometimes you get
over the transom.
Some people you don't know.
Twitter DMs.
Exactly.
Yep.
Or people who come out of the woodwork and you're like, I don't know who you are. I don't even know if I should trust you. I've never talked to you before, but thanks for the information.
But let me publish an article based on this information because what the heck, it's been a slow day.
Oh, it happens so often, right?
Mm-hmm. I know.
Not with you guys, but with everybody
else.
Yeah,
of course. Yeah.
That's why we love you, because we can trust you. All right.
By the way, just real quick, I tweeted this during the commercial break there, but Android Police is reporting that Microsoft Word is the first Microsoft Publish app to hit the 500 million Play Store install mark.
Really?
It's technically the second. I believe Skype hit that as well, but Skype, for some reason, is published by Skype, not by
Microsoft.
That's
amazing. 500 million. Yeah. Wait a minute. That's half a billion. That's kind of mind-boggling.
I mean, at least
I'm one of them. I'm one of them.
Good for you, Mary Jo. I don't think I've installed it.
I have it on because people send me Word documents a lot, and I'm like, let me just look at this thing, right?
Huh, that's really interesting.
Surface Pro 4s with flickering issue, Microsoft acknowledges and is fixing.
Finally. I know. I don't want to ding them too hard.
Coined the term Flickergate, and I thought that was my thing. How dare they?
It's funny. There was a website for Flickergate with people who had Surface Pro 4s with flickering screens who were all putting their stories on this site, and I went to it last week, and it was gone.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So there have been so many reports of this, but again, I'm not going to say there are 1,000 or millions of people who've been affected, and not every Surface Pro 4 user was affected by this either, but there were quite a few people who reported flickering screens with Surface Pro 4s ever since they were introduced in 2015. And Microsoft tried to patch it a few times. Remember, they had firmware patches and different patches.
Fix, yeah. But a hardware issue.
People
right?
kept going, and it just they felt like they were being ignored, and Microsoft kept saying it's not a large subset of customers. So
has any company ever admitted that the vast majority of our customers have been impacted by this issue? You know, can you imagine anyone ever saying that?
Yeah,
I know. Oh wait, Rich Wood said Flickrgate is still up. Is it still there? Yep, it's there. I went to it last week, it was down. So go to Flickrgate.com. We are 2,000 plus customers who lost $3 million plus dollars due to faulty, defective Surface Pro devices.
Wow.
Yikes.
That's serious. That's serious stuff.
Help us raise our voice. Yeah.
It's as if thousands of voices were crying out in pain and then went silent.
You know, I felt bad for these people because some of them went and their warranties had, I think, expired, and then they had to pay to try to get it repaired. And Microsoft's also working with those people too, around the warranty. I think that it's great. Microsoft is doing
flickering.
The right thing.
That's not just flickering. That's bad. This is what they're
I never
talking
saw
about.
That. Did you guys ever see?
Never.
No.
That's a defective PC. That isn't even a recall. That's a defective PC. You bring that in and you show it to the guy at the desk, and he gives you a new one.
Yeah.
Yep. How could
you
hope. Yes. I mean, the thing is jumping all over. That's not just like a little flick. I thought it was just, you can kind of barely perceive it. Little flicker.
Yeah.
Well, some people had that too. What was that called? The leak, right? Where you saw some light on the edges.
The light leakers could drive me crazy.
Me too. Because every device has
every
that to
device.
Some degree.
All LCDs. Well, most LCDs, they haven't yet.
You see it in certain conditions, it'd be like during a reboot cycle or whatever. It's like, guys, come on. Yeah. It's not like you have a pixel out or something. Yeah. The screen's fine.
I'm glad they must have found a bad component or something, and they're going to
finally. Yeah. It. So if you're one of the people affected, there's a whole set of instructions on Microsoft's site about what to do. You're going to get a refurbished device. It's going to take you like 4-5 to 8 business days to get your exchange device.
Do you have to give them the device and then get it?
Yep.
Oh, so you're kind of out of pocket for a while.
It's tough.
It's not great, but I'm just happy to see them do this because I still would hear from people periodically say, why aren't you guys writing about the flickering screen? And I'm like, we've written about it a few times.
It's because we hate people who buy Surface devices. That's why.
That's it. That's it.
How do you not know that?
How many? How widespread does something like this have to be? I wonder.
I don't know.
We
never have a good sense when these kinds of things happen because Microsoft always says it's a small subset of users, and the people who are hit by it, of course, are very vocal and they flood your inbox and your Twitter.
But if it's 1,000 people, they could drive you nuts. But that's 1,000 out of millions. It's not.
Yeah, if I were to get an email from someone who said, "Hey, I'm having this problem," my advice would be what I think Mary Jo said or whoever said. Bring it to the. Or whoever, I guess, would be Leo. bring it to the Microsoft store and have it replaced.
Yeah. It seems it looked that bad, as bad as the video on that website, it seems that would not be a difficult thing. All the chat rooms saying, they'll just say, you dropped it. It's not our fault. Mm-hmm. But come on. If they're seeing a few of these.
You never know. I mean, Apple has their own reliability issues with MacBooks and whatever.
They're going through hell now over the keyboard, right?
Yeah. And you don't get a lot of insight into it because they'll make the same claim.
They don't tell you.
A handful of people have said this where, we'll take care of it quietly.
Boy, I would love to see Apple just at least abandon that crappy keyboard.
Yeah, me too.
It's been good for Lenovo and Dell and other companies. Mm-hmm. I ain't buying any laptops.
It's been good for MacBook Air sales, too. You know?
Yeah, that's true. Well, I bought, you know, what I did is I kept my 15-inch 2015.
Yeah, the previous one.
Yeah,
sure.
That's the last good one. Interestingly, we talked about this on Tuesday on MacBreak Weekly. They're still selling that, even though it's a Haswell processor. And the only thing I can think of is that there's still enough people that say, I'm not buying that new keyboard.
Yep.
But that's a three-year-old processor now.
But to me, that seems like a far bigger issue than the Surface Pro 4 flickering thing, only because it's just so obviously more widespread of a problem. Mm-hmm. I'm not diminishing or minimizing the issue here. I mean, it's obviously a problem, but I don't know. I tend to hear from lots of people when things like this are wrong. You know, like I went through that thing with Windows 10 version 1803, and I have people who write, you know, and say, how can you say this thing's a disaster? And, you know, blah, 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 whatever. Because I get a lot of email from people,
right.
You know.
Same.
I feel like I have a pretty good handle on whether something is okay or not. And I don't know. This one wasn't super on my radar, to be honest. So.
I don't know if you remember, just fairly recently, there was a whole group of people who started putting the Surface Pro 4 in the freezer to try to stop the flickering thing.
That's awesome.
And did that help?
Some people said it helped, but only temporarily.
Yeah,
that's interesting. I can think of why. That sounds like
Really? Why?
It's what they call a cold solder. Whereas it heats up, it completes the connection.
It gets looser or whatever, and it makes the connection. Yeah. Less
yeah, no,
solid.
That actually wouldn't be if that actually wouldn't be a surprising diagnostic.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, when they're making web pages and they've got a name, Flickrgate, that's maybe that's time to start thinking about responding.
Yeah, and if you're gearing up to launch some new Surface devices, you don't want that hanging over your head when people do some research, right?
Well,
for sure.
I wonder what the general perception is of Surfaces, because I've heard enough bad stuff about them that I'm wondering if people are saying maybe these aren't the best hardware. I don't know.
I've said this a bunch of times, but there's something special about Surface, Surface Book 2 now, and Surface Laptop. And Surface Pro, although, it's just a smaller device, so I'm just not as inclined to use that particular one.
I love the Studio.
Really well made, have excellent typing and pointing experiences. The screens are fantastic. Did Mary Jo just make a face at me? What was that?
No.
She was rubbing her nuts.
I was trying not to sneeze while you were saying that.
Here, I'll cut Mary away. Was
like, yeah, I don't know what he's
saying. Whatever, Paul.
Whatever you think.
Fine.
Actually, you have the NVX2 now, right, Mary Jo?
I do.
The ARM one. Now, so
inquiring minds want to know.
Yes. What did you think?
Okay. So I went to set it up on the day I got back from build, and I have a link in the show notes about what happened when I went to set it up. It didn't go so well.
Is that thing that happened, was it blue colored?
The blue
colored
frowny face.
Yeah.
There are lots of problems with 1803, I'm just saying.
Was that when you just turned it on, or was that the upgrade after?
So I think 1803 was already on it when I started to set it up. And then all of a sudden it was downloading updates, and then I blue screened. And I didn't actually bother to look what that barcode was. But
you got this from HP.
I got this from Paul. I blame Paul.
Oh, no wonder.
Exactly.
Hold on a second.
Oh, you didn't mention that.
Let's not shoot the messenger here, right?
I've been trying to get one from HP, and they kept saying we don't have enough to get
one. Mine does not have 1803 yet. So what did you, Paul, were you a seeker, not a peeker?
I don't like the way this is going.
A picker, not a peeker.
She had a blue screen. I think we should just leave it at that.
Okay.
It doesn't come with 1803, I guess is my point. And I still haven't gotten it as last time I checked, so.
Well, so Paul had already moved this to Pro off of S, and it was on Pro when I got it. And so when I went to see, to start setting it up, I looked at what version I had, and I'm like, oh, I think I'm on 1803 already. And then it started, I think, applying the cumulative update to 1803, and that's when this happened.
Yeah.
So people who analyze the barcode.
I see this all the time, by the way.
I know.
This isn't that unusual.
No, it's not that unusual. And people who analyzed the barcode said I had a pool cleaner issue, whatever that means. I know you guys know.
Your pool cleaner. You need to call the pool guy and have him come out and fix that.
That's what I said. That's what I said.
Your pool cleaner.
Cue the 70s music.
The pool boy.
Pool cleaner.
I'm here to clean
said,
your pool, lady.
Ooh, you had the pool cleaner issue.
That's a memory. That's a memory
back
issue.
To S mode, and it didn't. And
I didn't try to put it back. But,
you know, before you sent it to her, Paul, you could have done her a favor. You could have put S
I did
back
reset
back.
It for her. I thought it was.
You did. You reset good. It. It just stayed on pro, though.
I'm not a PC maker. I'm sorry.
No, it will do that. That's, remember, we did that whole thing about once you proify it, you have to you have to reinstall the ISO, the Windows S ISO. You can't.
So I haven't tried to do that. I've been using Pro, but what I've been doing is using Pro as if I'm using S.
Yeah.
So I'm only using store apps, and I even am only using Edge and not Chrome.
Guess what?
So far,
that's all Pro is.
Yeah.
I mean, S is. Right? That's all it is.
S mode.
That's S mode. You're doing it manually. S mode. But
I have a question for both of you guys about this. So here's what I've liked so far. It runs fine. Like, I run very minimal apps. I run Notepad, as you guys know, and I run mostly web apps otherwise. And so app performance hasn't been an issue for me.
It keeps up with your typing and all that.
It keeps up with my typing. I also have had really good luck switching from Wi-Fi to cellular. It's really seamless.
Yeah,
and
love
the cellular
that.
Connection.
Oh, could I ask real quick? Because you threw, we put the Verizon SIM in there. So how did that process go? Did you just
all I did? Yeah, it just came on by itself. I didn't have to do anything. Yeah. It just, I shut off Wi-Fi and cell turned on.
They've
boom.
Nailed that. I have to say, I agree with you on that.
Yep. That's good.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's my problem with this so far.
This is the craziest problem. Mary Jo has the most awesome problems with things because they're always like never what it should be. But this is amazing.
So I'm having a problem with battery life, which is supposed to be the best.
Wait a minute.
Right?
What? I
know. It's unbelievable. Okay.
But here's why I think I'm having battery life issues. So I think what
all the
Microsoft.
Usage?
No. Yeah. Heavy Notepad usage. Definitely. but no.
It's just not optimized. Well,
what are you getting?
Okay, here's how I've been using it. So I'll use it like 4 hours, and then I'll shut the lid, and then I'll come back to it, you know, either later, the next day, use it for a couple more hours, shut the lid, blah. And then I'm suddenly at 10% battery. I'm like, wait, wasn't this supposed to be like a week worth of battery? But I'm guessing,
too, you know.
Oh, standby is working. Standby is working. It's not draining the battery when I'm not using it, but I look at my battery meter and I'm like, and I've got like 10% left after 2 days. Why? Is it because I'm not using it as intermittently as they think people are going to use it? I'm using it in chunks of hours?
it shouldn't be, but obviously if you're interactively using the device, it's going to use the high performance cores and that would impact, well, battery life, right? I mean, obviously it would, but it doesn't seem to me like you would ever use any high CPU usage type applications.
You know what drains? When I look at the list of what's draining my battery, Edge is the biggest battery drain that I have.
That's always the case, though.
Which is a very efficient app, though.
Yeah, but the web is. I mean, web browsing is not cheap.
Yeah. And I'm pretty, like, I keep Twitter open and it's always updating, right? And I'm using CMS in the web and I'm always browsing. So I use the web a lot. But
I'm wondering if it's not sleeping when you're closing the lid.
Yeah, because that is really the key to both battery life and standby time, you know, where it's supposed to slip down to those high efficiency cores and just really kind of sip battery from there.
Yeah. I got to look at more into it. So I've only been using it for a few days, but I expected this to be like my Kindle where, you know, you charge it once every 2 weeks and you don't worry about it.
No. So it's still laptop battery life. It's not.
I noticed kind of the same thing. It was funny. Well, not the battery life issue, but before I got this, I had talked to several people who had these things at Microsoft, at HP. And they all kind of said the same thing. It was interesting. They all talked about the standby time like this was some kind of revelation, you know. And my experience with devices on the Surface Book 2 that I have here, although now it's on RS5 and this no longer works, but Surface Laptop as well, You know, you open the lid of the thing, and maybe you haven't touched it in days, and it comes right on, screen pops right on, and the battery life hasn't really gone down that much. Mm-hmm. And I actually think that stuff works great. And when I used the NVX2, I didn't really notice a particular benefit to the standby time. I never saw that as such a big deal, even though so many people told me it was huge.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I thought the battery life was great, though.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on your expectations. It sounds like you really thought it was just going to be, you know, it's not a Kindle.
It's, you know,
It's
I still wanted more out of it. I'm like, wait, like after 2 days, I like open it and I'm like ready to take it outside with me. And I'm like, and the battery's at 10%. I need to charge it. It does charge very fast. I will say that.
Yeah. Type-C charging is great. By the way, did you mention that this new Surface books are rumored to come with Type-C charging? Did you mention that?
Yeah.
That's good.
I think
good
we did just in passing.
I like Type-C charging. I'm a fan.
Yeah, it's going to be. That's going to be good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I'm not ready to give up on the Envy. I really want this to work out. But app performance wise, it's good. Edge. You know, Edge not so good though. I got to agree with you on Edge. My Edge browser keeps freezing. Although it's freezing less now that I'm using an ad blocker on it.
The freezing may be due to the slowness of the processor because, JavaScript ads and stuff.
Lenovo and Asus have more traditional form factor devices, which maybe you might like better, too. I think the NVX2 tablet form factor is slightly awkward, especially the weird, you know, fold-down flap that's the kickstand, which is neat on the surface of things, but it's the opposite of the way all kickstands work and... Yeah. You can't use it on your lap, and it's not.
Yeah, what was the lap ability? You didn't.
Zero. Lap ability.
Yeah. Zero.
Nothing.
Yeah. No, I found the same.
I've been using it on a table.
So when I went to Colorado, that's when I really used it on the road, and I also brought along a ThinkPad that I was reviewing at the time, and to use that thing on my lap, I had to put the ThinkPad under it.
That's funny. There's a good use.
So yeah, it was like a $1,300 stand.
Stack.
You're right about the kickstand though. Every time I go to put up the kickstand, I have to lay the device upside down and like, how do I open this again?
You'll get used to that.
I think
it's very elegant looking, and I think once you get used to the kickstand, it's kind of an elegant little.
Yeah, it's nice.
You just go. Whoop, whoop.
HP was kind of defensive about the material that they used in the keyboard cover, right? Because it's not leather. And it's certainly not like an Alcantara kind of thing, but it has a, it's like a poly, I don't know if it's plastic mix or some kind of whatever it is. And I think it's great.
It doesn't bother me. I never even thought about it.
No, I like the feel of the keyboard, except for the bounciness.
Proactively like, hey, this isn't cheap.
Yeah, that's the other one. And we mentioned that before, that because the keyboard is unsupported, it's got a little
boingy. It is. It's a little springy.
Boinginess when it's flapped up like that.
Yeah.
I think it's great. I just think it's not. It's a kind of specialty machine. If it's your only computer, then you better be a first line worker. That's all I can say.
Sorry. Sorry for the heavy breathing.
Sorry about that.
he's getting worried about it.
I have an Intel version. I don't have them, but I want to review those. I've asked HP about this because I like the form factor. I mean, it's, it's not my thing exactly, but I could picture a lot of people wanting this kind of thing. And like Leo said, it's kind of an elegant looking device, and it has that kind of briefcase or satchel or what. It's got that kind of executive
portfolio
kind of look.
It
does, right? It's professional looking. It's nice.
I like taking it to meetings. I really do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you open it up and it doesn't run anything properly. It's fantastic.
It's running all my things properly.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if you stick with apps, particularly with Microsoft apps, everything seems to work all right. Yeah. It's when you branch out.
Right.
Redstone 5. Can you explain what is that? That's the next generation?
The next version of Windows. So this is the one that's coming out in September, October.
Okay, 1809 or something.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, this one is interesting to me because of the skip-ahead system they have now in the Insider program, they can test two versions of Windows side by side for a time period, right? So they started that as RS3 was winding down last fall. And they allowed some people to skip ahead to RS4. And then as RS4 was winding down, they allowed some people to skip ahead to RS5. Except that when I went back and looked at it, this actually happened months ago. They released, off the top of my head, I think it was 7 builds of RS5 before RS4 was completed. So there's already kind of a wide body of work that has occurred in this release. And so I kind of went back. I decided this time to do things differently than I did with the last release. And I'm putting RS5 on some of my PCs and then leaving some of them on RS4. And there's an interesting, I don't want to call it a sea change because that's not really fair, but there's kind of a subtle shift in emphasis in this release, at least so far, that I think is a very positive move, meaning not a lot of big bang features, although there's at least one, which is that sets feature, but rather a lot of smaller changes that are all kind of productivity focused, right? Not universally, but almost universally. And I like this type of thing. Like to me, this is how Windows should be evolved over time. And I kind of like the direction it's heading in. Also, Mary Jo will enjoy the additional application of fluent design system elements across the operating system. It's
such a fluent fan.
I will enjoy that. If I ever can see it, I will love it.
I really think it's like they're getting there. You remember when
they are
Apple
getting
started
there.
Adding, when they added transparency effects to Mac OS X, which I guess they did from the beginning, really, it was kind of goofy and muddy and kind of weird looking. And then over time, they evolved it and it got really nice. And then when Windows Vista came out, Microsoft went through the same process. Like at first, it was kind of muddy and weird and terrible with the glass. And then Windows 7 came and they kind of got it right. Now that they're doing these kind of effects again, you know, the first kind of applications of this stuff to me didn't look that great. But the way it looks in RS5, I think it's really professional looking. I think it's got a nice kind of consistent look and feel. It's nice.
Yeah. I am starting to be able to see it. And I think it looks nice. I just think it's... Yeah. Something people are making a huge deal out of that I'm like, okay, there's a little transparency, a little blurry, a little light shining on an item. Okay, it's good.
Are they going to get sets? Are they going to get sets into this?
Yes, yes.
I'm and changing the subject, Mary Jo. You'll be glad.
Yeah. Okay. That's really interesting, and it's in a weird spot now because obviously that's evolving over time too. So. Sets, this isn't going to be completely accurate, but Sets is basically available. Well, first of all, they're doing A/B testing, so you may or may not get it. Raphael has a tool that will enable it if you didn't get it. I put that in one of my posts.
Raphael has a tool or is a tool?
He is a tool that made a tool.
Okay, got
that
it.
Will enable Sets
just
on
checking.
You. Just checking. Yeah. It's... There is a lot of stuff going on with Sets, and it's kind of strange because you can get it on basically all store apps. You can get it on some desktop applications. It is available in File Explorer. There's weird behaviors. You know, if you do it's like Control Windows key plus T, it actually opens an Edge tab inside the whatever you're in, right?
What?
You know, like a new tab is not a new tab for the current application. It's a new Edge tab.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and the UI, you know, in Microsoft Edge, I think two versions ago in Windows, they added the ability to collect tabs into these groups that you could save and then return to later. That functionality is available in Sets too. And so it's very clear that the tab functionality in Sets is based on the tab functionality in Edge. And so there's kind of a cross there. And if you think about how, like, you know, we were just saying with Mary Jo, most people spend a lot of time on the web. You know, it makes a little bit of sense. You might want to do something on the web.
Yeah.
But you can drag and drop arbitrary windows onto each other and create tab sets. And because they have that saving feature, this actually answers a big complaint I had with virtual desktops, which is another way to organize application windows into groups. And it works pretty well if you know how to find it and know how to use it. But the big problem with it is eventually you're going to reboot and you lose all that stuff.
Yeah,
there's
right.
No way to save it.
I'd love to save a set. Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah.
Well, you can. You can save sets. So yeah. You can't save virtual desktops, but you can save sets. And I think just by virtue of the fact that, A, sets are right there in front. You see them. You see the tabs. So it's more discoverable. And there's UI right there for saving the sets. I think people are going to, you know, I think there might be the chance that people actually use it, unlike virtual desktops, which, you know, it's there, but I just don't think people even see it or know it's there.
Cool. I look forward to
that. Yeah, it seems good. It seems like it's in good shape.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
And then you are saying PWA support is improved in this.
Yeah. So, you know, Google and Microsoft last week obviously had their big developer shows. Google had a bunch of stuff about PWAs. Microsoft had some stuff about PWAs. I'd say the two companies are at slightly different places, right? Google's well down the path, and Microsoft is just starting to implement PWA support in their operating system. So some of the stuff at Build was very introductory because I think PWAs are still new to developers, and they kind of go through the whole thing. This is what it is. This is why it's not silly. This is why web apps are great, and, you know, on and on it goes. But some of the sessions did focus on some of the things that will be coming in the next version of Windows, which is RS5. And one of the big ones is the ability to install PWAs from the web, which is how you do it today on Google's platform. So in other words, if you're browsing the web with Microsoft Edge and you come onto like the Starbucks web app or the Twitter mobile, you know, Twitter Lite app, you'll get a prompt that will allow you to install right from there. You don't have to go to the store. Hmm. Likewise, if you're looking at Bing search results, you'll see PWA install buttons right in the search results, right? So this is Microsoft in a way, you know, they did their own thing with the store, so they were the first guys to do that. Google's going to copy that in a future release of Android/Chrome OS, whatever. Microsoft is now kind of doing what Google did previously, which is adding the ability to arbitrarily install PWAs from the web. So eventually, these platforms will probably all behave semi-identically as they adopt each other's features.
Hmm. Cool.
Yeah. I mean, I guess there's a debate about discoverability of apps and which is the better approach, and I think the better approach is to do it all. So,
It should be, you should see it wherever.
Yeah.
And
some people like to browse stores, you know.
Yeah.
Some people like to be on the web.
You know, I think the notion is really that it's there when you need it.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't know.
Yeah, and I think there's, you know, you may be using a web app or whatever in a browser and it's fine and it works well, you know, but if they prompt you and say, hey, by the way,
right,
you know, you can install this thing. It can have its own button in the taskbar, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like an app. I think a lot of people would take them up on that.
I know. You know, so the only one that I have used regularly is the mobile Twitter app.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's actually identical to the regular Twitter app, really.
Yeah, it's really nice.
On iOS and Android. And then, I guess it's kind of if you open Twitter.com on your phone, that's what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. And I have seen prompts to say, would you like to put this on your home screen?
Right.
Which really feels to people, at least to people on Android and iOS, like, oh, yeah, that's just a bookmark. I've done that before.
But you know what? In some ways, that is the point of a PWA, you know, that progressive part of it.
Because
iOS, what you're getting is a shortcut. Like you said, it's just any website you can put a shortcut. Right, right now in iOS, that's it. That's what you're going to get. It's just they don't have a facility. You know, it's not. You're not really installing the app. On Android, you are installing an app, but it has system capabilities
on notifications. That's the big
one, right? That's right. And so the Twitter guys actually did a session. It's worth watching at Build about what they did to add native Windows 10 features. And they were talking about how they're going to add even more native features over time. And so, you know, they support the notification system and the Action Center in Windows 10. They support live tiles. I think they support, jump lists, if I remember correctly. But they're going to be adding more support for native Windows 10 features over time. And it's just one of those things. It's one app. It behaves a little bit differently on each platform, you know, based on whatever the native capabilities are. And that's the beauty of progressive web apps. You know, you have that one code base.
I think there was a session at Build 2 about Starbucks and a progressive web app.
Yeah, there were. Also. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I'm learning as fast as I can. I want to become a full stack web developer for my next job.
Of course.
And for me, I can see a great use for it for people like me, podcasters. If you go to twit.tv on your mobile phone and you have the ability to turn it into a standalone podcast app that works offline,
yep.
I think that's really valuable for us. And so I can see just for my own purposes how useful this would be, that it would be a great way to do that for users. Mm-hmm. They'd get all the benefits of an offline podcasting app just by going to the website. And it looks like bookmarking it.
It's a familiar thing for people, yeah. And it may make it more approachable. Just on kind of a side note with PWAs, because I am, of course, the patron saint.
you are.
If you watch some of the Google sessions from I.O. last week on PWA and on web development and so forth, they mention, and it's weird to me this wasn't a big announcement, but they are adding PWA technologies to all of their major web services like Gmail and Search and so forth. And so how those things will benefit you will differ, you know, from service to service. But for example, the new Gmail app on the web just added offline capabilities. Now, you could do offline with Gmail before, but it required an extension or a special version of the app if you had Chrome. This version just supports offline capabilities because that's one of those things you kind of get with PWAs. And so that's really cool. And this opens the door to that, you know, the dream, if you will, on Windows, which is that we'll have some kind of sophisticated support for Google apps in Windows 10. Now, they'll have to, you know, update their manifest file to say, yeah, it's okay to put us in the store, and who knows if that's going to happen. It's kind of a weird Cold War thing, but, you know, cross your fingers and throw the salt over your shoulder, whatever it is. You know, it could happen.
But that, to answer your initial question, if I did an app like that, it would be something that would kind of look like a bookmark of a website. I guess you could put it in the store. Maybe I should, yeah. Because then that would establish the notion that, oh, and this is a full-fledged app.
Yeah, you should look at each of those platforms and see what you can do on each and do what makes sense for that app on each.
I mean, it does make sense. You'd want to be everywhere people might, you know, want to find you. Discoveries, everything.
And, you know, it also kind of degrades gracefully. So if you're using Windows 7, you can still, obviously it's a website, so you can still access it. You're not going to have the offline capabilities. But you can at least listen to, you can stream podcasts.
It's no worse than the old school, you know, wrapped website application.
Yep. But it's still better. It's better for you in a big way because it's literally a single app.
Right.
You know, it's so powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Well,
if I mention PWAs, because by the way, they are huge.
You know, that's the crazy thing about Build. I don't think they really put PWA stuff out front and center as I thought they were going to.
I was very surprised. Even Google didn't really mention it in their keynote.
Not at all. And that blows my mind.
I know
they only have so much time, and they certainly had some big announcements, and we can talk about how keynotes are and how they should be. But I felt like both companies should have done a better job of promoting this stuff right up front. They did both talk about it a lot at their respective shows in sessions and so forth. But the problem I have with this is you've assembled developers and you want to get them on board. You got to mention this thing like, you know, Microsoft had 5.5 hours of keynotes and I don't think they uttered the phrase PWA or Progressive Web App even once. And it's like, guys, seriously, like they're here. You know, let them know this is important.
I mean, maybe it was because the audience are people who mostly are .NET developers writing line of business apps and native apps. I don't know, but
by the way, that's I'm sure was part of the rationale. But here's the thing: speaking at user groups and going to user groups, I go to a developer user group here outside of Philadelphia. The one thing I know about this audience is that they're always like everyone else. We're concerned about our careers and our futures, and how do I keep myself relevant? And one of the ways you do that as a developer is to make sure that you're up to date on the latest technologies that make sense. And I would say in the Microsoft world, there's kind of the Microsoft developer world, there's kind of a limit to what the audience is for your .NET skills or whatever. And that audience is it's that thing that you just said, like line of business apps and apps that might be running inside of enterprises and so forth. The ability to, the reason Xamarin's so exciting is because it opened up the world of mobile to those people. The reason PWAs are so exciting is because it opens up everything to those people. Mm-hmm. And that's what you want. You want to be able to offer your developer base, in Microsoft's case, the best possible opportunities. And as a developer, you want to give that to yourself as well. And I just feel like you got to mention it. just mention it.
Yeah.
You know, they're sitting right there.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Very strange.
The new Build is here, and something interesting in 17.672,
I know you just got it. But you quote in your article about this, Paul, that Donna Sakar says that now there's this new Windows security app feature that you can have antivirus products. In fact, I think you have to have them run as protected processes inside.
Do you? Okay, so are either one of you on Windows 10, not RS5?
Yes.
Do you mind? Do me a favor.
Oh, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Open the start menu and type in Defender.
Okay.
And just, I can't remember the name of this application because it's ridiculous, but it's something like Windows Defender Advanced.
Windows Defender Security Center?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
That one?
So that one's called Windows Security now.
Okay.
So the application is exactly the same, except it's beautiful because of Fluent Design System, Mary Jo's favorite feature. and they renamed it to Windows Security, which is a much easier, you know, kind of name. Actually, I don't think that's a good name because when that product, that app, is not just about security. It's really about PC health. And it has links to all kinds of things that are not just security, right? They have to do with the you know, reliability and maintenance.
Family options, device performance and health, device security, app and browser control, firewall and network protection, account protection.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot
I think
of
we
stuff
can agree, though, the name of that thing in your version is terrible. Like it's good that they're fixing it.
Yeah.
Microsoft had announced some time ago that they were going to require antivirus vendors to meet some sort of a standard to be included in this thing.
Good.
Yeah, except unless you're an antivirus vendor, by the way, because those guys have been breaking the rules for a long time in order to get better performance or better access to the system. And I think there's been some pushback on that. And so it looks like, based on today's little announcement, that they're going to start to formally require that as of RS5.
Good. I think this is very good.
Yeah,
it's smart, but it's you know, we're going to go through that little period where we're going to hear complaints from smaller companies, and Microsoft is screwing them over.
Of course we are. Yeah. Not a fan, really, of third-party antiviruses, but...
No, I'm not either.
I'd be more of a fan if they played better with others, you know?
We can't inconvenience those companies enough. I don't like that they have to exist. It just doesn't make sense to me.
So for a long time, I've been talking about the Tower of Babel has become these voice assistants and how, what would be really nice, because we're going to have, what was it? I can't remember. Said, I just want one of each on my fireplace, on my mantle. That's not what we want.
What we want is
one assistant that calls all the other assistants.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was kind of
see what that looks like.
Yeah. I was kind of intrigued by this Cortana plus Alexa integration that they talked about. It isn't what I was hoping for, but I understand that that's kind of the thought of the future. Am I on the right track here that this is where they might want to go?
But just so we're clear about this, the most interesting thing she's about to say is that she talked to the guy running this, and he doesn't talk to anybody.
Wow. Nice.
Right?
Well, right. But do you know how many months I was begging to talk to him?
Well, mission accomplished.
Cajoling, sending gifts, sending flowers. You know, I'm like, come on, just let me talk to Javier Soltero. Let me talk to him.
Good.
And at Build, I finally got to.
Good.
Yeah, which was great. Yeah. So, you know, like you're saying, Leo, at Build, we talked about the integration between Cortana and Alexa. That was like a big showpiece for them as part of the keynote. And they were talking about progress is happening, but we're not ready yet. It's in private preview. But the more interesting thing to me was some of the other parts of the conversation I had with him about how Microsoft is thinking now about Cortana versus how she's been positioned in the past. And it may sound very subtle, but what they're doing is changing the way they look at building this from an assistant to an assistant's aide. Like instead of an assistant, an assistant's aide. So this just means what we've been saying on Windows Weekly a lot, which is we're going to build this into all the apps and all the services and try to get third parties to build it into their apps and services too. Instead of looking at it like, hey, we still have a chance at the smart speaker market. They don't. And he was pretty forthright about that. He was like, you know what, the market, we saw it, we missed it, we're moving to a new place. And that, I think that's good that they're being realistic instead of saying, you know what, we still think we can win in the smart speaker market, because they can't. Instead, they're going to do more integrations like this. They're going to try to make Cortana situationally appropriate. He kept saying that too, which means wherever you are, you know, you're not just sitting next to your speaker in the kitchen, but say you're using an app in your car or on your phone, even if it's not a Windows phone, or, you know, you're on your Xbox or you're doing something in another room or in another building or work, it's going to be there. It's just going to be built in. That's a very different positioning than they've been using up to this point with Cortana. So I thought that was really interesting. And when I talked to him about, okay, so if you're doing that, will Cortana ever go away as a persona? You know, do you really need to keep having this thing, you know, look like a person or act like a person? What, why don't you just make it a service and not make it a branded or name service? And he said, nope, Cortana's not going away. She's staying as a persona because we think those two things can still kind of reinforce each other.
I don't mind that. I like the idea of a personality there. That's
so that's going to stay for sure, he said. And the other thing he said, which could be of interest to developers, is, you know what? We were trying to get you guys to write skills the way Alexa and Google have skills, to which are basically apps to supplement the core service. But now we realized we were kind of breaking up our developer base because some people were writing stuff for bot frameworks. Some people were writing for the skills that we have for Cortana. We're going to try to bring these two things together now. And he definitely hinted to me bot framework is the way you're going to build stuff for Cortana going forward. Another good and practical move, I think, instead of continuing to beat their head against the wall when they only have a few hundred skills and Alexa has like, what, 10,000 or something crazy like that.
So Soltero came from Accompli.
He did.
That's
when Microsoft
cool.
bought Accompli. Yeah. Yep.
I love Accompli.
He came over.
Which shows that he's kind of a more nimble, non-big company kind of guy, right?
Yeah. Right.
Nice.
And he was heading up Outlook for Microsoft. Then he became a really big deal in Office. And it says a lot to me that they put him on Cortana because he's kind of the fix-it guy and the cross-platform guy. And now he's the head of product for Cortana. So, yeah, another interesting thing, and I'm curious how this will work out, because I also asked him about Alexa for Business. And I said, you know, to me, they're going straight into your wheelhouse with that. And you keep saying you're going to be focused on embedding into business apps and things like conference rooms. That's what they're doing with that. So what's your, you know, differentiation proposition? And he said, the thing that we have, which is kind of interesting, is people know they trust us basically with their corporate data. They know either we're saving it in the cloud or you're saving it into our software on your own internal servers. So people kind of trust us with that. And he didn't go so far as to say they don't trust Amazon or they don't trust Google, but he was kind of hinting like, you know what, we've got that enterprise thing down with the trust in terms of how we handle your data, how we distinguish when something needs to be private. Because he said, you know, if you're using a voice assistant, you don't want it to suddenly be reading off private corporate emails that are, you know, restricted.
I think you nailed it. I think Microsoft is for business. And you don't think of Amazon especially. Maybe Google, but not Amazon. No,
they're trying to change that. Now. But at least not yet. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's like, you know, Amazon's a retailer.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But Leo, I can get 10% off of Whole Foods. I don't understand why I wouldn't go to them for enterprise services.
Well, and I think what he may not have wanted to say is both Google and Amazon are all about using your information to make ads, to sell ads. And that's not what Microsoft's about. So.
No.
Not for lack of trying, but.
It was an interesting conversation with the guy, and it made me kind of think, okay, I'm really happy to see them being realistic and not just continue to say, you know what, we can beat them at their own game, which I think it's too late for that.
I completely agree, and I this makes a lot of sense.
It does.
I like this idea.
Actually, honestly, just speaking generally, I think the nicest thing about Microsoft today, you know, the new Microsoft or Satya Nadella's Microsoft or whatever, is the interoperability stuff. You know, they just have stopped banging their heads against the wall and pretending that everything is Windows. And they're just open to everything, you know? And it's still alarming, you know, in some ways. There's some announcements. You're like, oh, wait a minute. What are they doing there? But it's really the smartest thing they could ever do. You know, it's just smart. And it's something I think previous regimes or whatever at Microsoft could never have done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Google, they really dropped the price for Google Drive storage, you know.
Yeah, they doubled the storage. And this is – I had a conversation with a guy from the OneDrive team at our meetup last week at Build. And I said to him, you know, I said, it's interesting. A couple of years ago, I was on the cusp of dropping OneDrive. And I was going to go to Dropbox. And the reason was the reliability and the performance. It was just terrible. And other people would cite the dropping of the placeholders feature, which was so huge for some in Windows 8, although I'd kind of gotten past that. But then something wonderful happened, you know, and OneDrive has become really good. The performance is excellent, the sync performance, the syncing in general, the reliability, whatever. And I've scaled that back. I don't use Dropbox anymore, except for the book where I have to because of the publishing system. But for my day-to-day work, for everything that I do, it's all OneDrive now. And that's the problem because I'm running out of storage. You can only get 1 terabyte of storage. That's the end. And the only way you can get that is if you subscribe to Office 365. So with Google going to 2 terabyte as the base, well, not as the base, but as a, it used to be 1 terabyte tier. Now they have a 2 terabyte tier for about $120 a year, which is roughly the price of Office 365 Home. And then offering 2 terabyte chunks over that, so you could go to 4 to 6 to 8, up to 30. They've addressed the problem I need addressed on OneDrive. So I'm hoping that Microsoft does the same. I don't mind paying for it. I'm not. I do think they should move the amount of storage you get with Office 365 to 2 terabytes. But I think above that, they need to allow people who are actually going to use the storage to arbitrarily add that storage. You know, and I wrote this in the article. You know, years ago in the Windows 8 timeframe, I had a conversation with Steven Sinofsky at one of the trade shows at Build or PDC or whatever it was. And I said, when are you guys going to do this? When are you guys going to make all the storage available to people through OneDrive or SkyDrive probably at the time, whatever it was? And he says, we're not. He says, that's a fool's game. He says, if Microsoft gave storage to people, they would use it. And then they would use it once. They'd never use it again. But we would be legally responsible for keeping it and keeping it available and making it geographically dispersed so that, you know, it could survive disasters and everything. And he's like, there's no way to make money doing that. It's ridiculous, you know. Obviously,
that's
since
kind
then,
of a good point, although clearly nobody knows it.
Well, but the difference is, you know, in other words, rather than just give it to people for having Windows, you have these subscriptions.
Yeah.
And you can charge for it. And,
yeah, continue to pay for it, yeah.
Then people will use it if they really need it, you know, because they're paying for it. So I think that that's fine. And I think the way the world's gone, you know, Microsoft is one of the few companies that can do this. I think they should do it. And I hope they do it. I hope they follow Google down that same path.
I think what Google's done just is acknowledging the reduction in cost of storage, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's just getting cheaper and cheaper.
Plus, they get that 10% discount for having the Amazon Prime subscription. So they, you know, they can save money there.
Yeah. Let's see. What else would we like to talk about before we take our break? All right. We could now, I guess. I think we've covered everything we could talk about. 1 week later, Build, anything on your mind?
Have you recovered, Mary Jo?
Oh, man, I was so exhausted when I came back from Build. I just felt like depleted, like those shows always are, right? I mean, we had a great meetup. The meetup was amazing.
Oh, how'd it go? Yeah, nice. Yep.
Thank you, Colleen, again, for finding the place. It was so great.
It was such a great place. Yeah.
It really was. We went to the Pine Box, which is a former mortuary turned into a beer bar.
That cracks me up. That's
so and we were in the Bruce Lee room, where I think
we
actually
interred in the Bruce Lee room.
Oh, how funny!
I think he was like he wasn't buried there, but like there's a connection with him in that room. I don't know what it was,
that's morbid.
Very morbid, yeah. But you know, my regret on all these shows is we don't have time to go to all the sessions, and there's so many good sessions. The best part is They're all recorded and available on YouTube or on Channel 9, and so you can go back and watch them. I've just been sitting here watching them.
What you just said was maybe is a way better tip than I have for later, which is that you should do that. So in other words, you don't have to go to build. You can go watch these sessions. And for people who are not developers, and if you care about Microsoft, you're interested in the future, whatever, I strongly recommend viewing some of these things. Go through the list, see what's there. This is how you really find out about what's happening at this company.
Yeah.
You know, the sessions are fantastic.
And there are a lot of variety in terms of times of sessions. So some of them are only like 20 minutes. You can just watch them really fast. Some are really in depth, 75 minutes. Both keynotes, even the one that was 3.5 hours, are both there in full.
You're underselling it. It was like 3 hours and 43 minutes. It was some crazy.
You can do the yoga stretches we did in the middle of it with us. And but yeah, I've just been trying to go through sessions and look for things. The slides are up there, so you can download the slides too, which is great.
Yeah.
But you had more insights, Paul, or more thoughts than I did about the future.
It's hard not to, when these things happen in the same week, right? Google I/O and Microsoft Build. It's hard not to compare them head to head, right? And people are always like, "Which one do you think was better?" And you know, whatever.
Yeah.
They're not. Microsoft deserves some credit for focusing very much on developers, even in the keynotes. You know, Google treats it as a marketing event. But you know what? I think that might be the better approach. And the reason there's so many reasons, right? I had written kind of about how disrespectful it was of people's time to waste that much time going through a vision keynote that a lot of people don't really care about to get to the meat, right? Which they might care about. You know, that dividing that into multiple keynotes would make more sense because it would let people choose which ones they wanted to see. But you know what the bigger issue is? And this, I didn't write about this, and I think this is very important for Microsoft to consider, is that it would be better for them to treat the keynote like a marketing event because that's how you get press. Mm-hmm. You know, that Google demo of the assistant calling the restaurant.
A lot of press, huh?
Yeah.
Here's how big this was. I heard about this from several normal people who asked me if I had heard about it because they had heard about it because it was such a big thing.
Yeah.
And we can debate, you know, what I know there's all these issues. Like, do we have to tell people it's a robot call? Well, I don't care about any of that stuff. It got an unbelievable amount of press. When you get press sitting in a room bored to death by what you're talking about, I'm sorry, but the coverage isn't going to be all that great. And that's a problem for Microsoft PR. That's something they need to fix. And I think they need to treat that public-facing keynote, the people streaming live, like Apple does with WWDC and Google does with I/O, and it should be a marketing event.
Yeah.
And this is your chance to talk about the future. They had one little bit that came close to that, and that was that Office of the Future bit, which was very interesting. Yeah. The Surface Hub thing, I know it has nothing to do with anything, should have been part of this.
Should have been there.
It would have been huge news.
Yeah. You know why they didn't, right? Because they have this idea that they want to have separate hardware events. You can also make the case that they got more, you know, got more press a week later after Build because they strung it out over 2 weeks.
I'm sorry. Again, you, for better or worse, schedule this thing right up against Google I/O. You have just set yourself up for failure.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry, but you blew it, Microsoft. I mean, that's just a mistake.
I thought they were going to disclose the dates for Build at Build this year for next year.
To avoid this.
To avoid this.
Yeah.
But
because
they had this thing.
They knew about this for months and never said anything. And then Google announced their dates, and they were like, "Uh-oh."
Yep.
Stupid.
Redmond, we have a problem.
Yeah.
So Chris Capicella, if you're listening, we need the.
We have ideas.
I understand that companies say, no, this is a developer event and it's really just for developers. But this is really, when you get a bully pulpit like this, put your best foot forward, show all your cool stuff, get people excited about what you're doing. That works for developers just as much as press.
When you beat people to death like they did with something that long, you're just sending the wrong message.
I bet
they learned
that lesson. I bet you anything. I mean, I think that's pretty clear.
Yeah, I hope so. It's too bad, you know, because it's a little odd. You could watch a Google event, and Apple does this too, like where, you know, Google Photos says, you know, however many users, and we have, here's a feature that does blah, blah, blah. It's zero to do with developers, like nothing. Who cares? they're getting press. That's the point.
And ultimately, you know, maybe not the line of business developers, but developers for apps and and commercial software and horizontal software, they love it. They want a company to be hot and successful and cool.
Exactly. You want to be part of that. Leo, you know, I'm sure Apple does these state of the platform speeches that are specifically for developer and are all developer topics. Those events, they kind of hide behind the kimono a little bit there. You have to be an Apple developer to view them online or whatever. And that's fine, because honestly, who cares? Why would anyone normal care about this?
For years at WWDC, the Apple would invite journalists to the keynote, then kick them out the minute it was over.
Yeah, so they could do
the actual developer event.
Right.
They've known and this that's from the, day one.
And yes, it's just, well, you know, some companies know how to market. I mean, what you need is a tight, short, exciting keynote. Remember when Microsoft used to go to CES, the point of Gates's keynotes and then later Ballmer's was to talk about the future. Mm-hmm. It was not like, here's what we're doing in 3 months. It was like, let's talk about the future. That's where all those office demos of the future and all those videos came from. This is their chance to do that. And you can still have developer keynotes, right? But the thing that everyone's going to watch, the first one, you know, where he gets on stage and drones on and on for 90 minutes about, I don't even know what it was. It's a mistake. It's just a strategic, terrible mistake.
Yeah.
That's all.
I agree. It was really painful. And I think you're right. Dividing the keynote up into parts, you know, the first part is just like, hey, everyone's
tell
watching. Let's do something crazy. Right.
Tell people. And right. And that was the first one should be fun. Should be short. Google's was, I think, an hour, 45 minutes, something like that.
Yeah,
maybe less.
Exactly. Yeah.
Nice, tight time frame. It's good. No bathroom breaks required. Yeah. No stretching exercises needed. And then you could have these other targeted keynotes. You know, if you're a client developer, if you're an embedded developer, if you're a cloud developer, we're going to have these big bucket kind of keynotes. And there won't be 5,000 people in a room. Maybe it'd be like a couple thousand each. Fine. That's the audience for those things. It's okay.
Right.
You know. Anyway, Microsoft, we're here. I can give you my address if you want to send me a check.
And here is the picture of the week.
Clippy
made out of Play-Doh, it looks like.
Oh, a version of Clippy that actually works.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah, baby. I'm still upset about Clippy.
Let's take a break. Back of the book. Coming up, I see Mary Jo just added her beer pick.
I did. Yep.
I'm you've kind of converted me into a beer drinker. I loved the beer in Japan. Is that just kind of considered not really great beer? Because I thought Asahi Dry is very good.
You know what? It's a good
it's
basic
a simple
beer.
Basic beer, but very drinkable,
and goes well with the food there.
That's what I was saying. It goes well with the food.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Really, really delicious. Well, we've got something even more interesting. A little hoppy.
Not too hoppy.
Not too hoppy. Just a little hoppy.
I think your definition of not too hoppy and mine are not very close.
We had a guy came up from Laverne, California. He's the brewmaster at Laverne Brewery. Brought me something called Ornithopter, which is a Belgian-style quad.
Ooh,
man.
Sounds like a type of dinosaur that has feathers.
It was aged in bourbon barrels, and my goodness, it stood up all on its own.
It sounds like God's nectar right there.
Yeah, that's my kind of beer. That's my kind of beer. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. If you're about to buy a home, you know, I mean, unless you're Bill Gates, you're not going to be writing a check for it. You're going to be getting a home loan. And wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it be, is it just a pipe dream, the idea that maybe you wouldn't have to go to a bank, get all dressed up, ask the banker, sit and listen to his tedious stories, drink their old coffee, then have to take home a 20-page application that requires home. I mean, it's homework. We're too old for homework. Go up into the attic, find old pay stubs and bank statements, find a fax machine. There's a better way. Thanks to Dan Harmon and the folks at Quicken Loans, best lender in the country. Man, these guys are great. Very technologically savvy. Always number one in customer satisfaction. 8 years in a row now, according to J.D. Power. And they also are geeks, which is why we kind of celebrate them. They came up with an all-online way to get a home loan called Rocket Mortgage. The Quicken Loans folks realized that the mortgage experience was kind of stuck in the last century, you know. And so they came up with something you could do on your phone. You could do at an open house. You could do, you know, on the couch. in about 8 minutes. In fact, if you go right now to rocketmortgage.com/windows and set up the account, it'll take even less time. Just take a minute to set up the account, and then you'll be ready. You don't have to go to the attic to get pay stubs or paperwork because they have relationships with all the financial companies. So all you have to do is give them permission. They'll go out and pull all the information they need. You just fill out a simple form. They get the information. They crunch the numbers. And based on income and assets and credit, they offer you a loan that's right for you. You get to choose the down payment, the term, the rate. They do the rest. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Not only is it fast and easy, it's simple. You'll understand every step of the way exactly what's going on, and then you can mortgage with confidence. Try it right now. Go to rocketmortgage.com/windows. Set up the account so you'll be ready when the time comes. Rocketmortgage.com/windows. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org. Number 3030. Rocketmortgage.com/windows. We thank Dan and the crew for providing the wherewithal to put Paul and Mary Jo on the big show.
On the moon.
We have the technology. Paul Theroux kicks us off with his tip of the week.
Yeah, a little tiplet to start it. I didn't put this in the notes, but because it is May 16th as we record this, that means that there are two more of the games from this month's game, Games with Gold, are now available. And one of them is a Metal Gear, what is it? Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain, is available on Xbox One and for free if you have Xbox Live Gold. And then Vanquish is available on Xbox 360 and also Xbox One. But the actual tip is that Microsoft has now enabled game gifting and also some content gifting through the Microsoft Store for PC games in addition to Xbox One games. And so they had enabled kind of, it was kind of a limited version of game gifting for Xbox late last year, I think it was. And now it's available on PC games as well. And what that means, obviously, is that you can go into the Microsoft Store and you can buy a game for yourself, but you can also buy it as a gift. And how you do that varies by platform. I think on the PC, you need an email address for the recipient. And on the Xbox One, if you do it through that store, you'll need their gamer tag to do it. There's some weird limitations around how many of these you can do at once and how many of these you can do over time or whatever. But the point here is that instead of buying someone a gift card, which seems like a nice idea, but doesn't always handle the tax and other fees and so forth, it's never, you know, exact. Now you can just buy someone a digital game and just buy the actual game, and you can give them the thing that they want. So that's kind of a cool feature.
Nice.
That is finally available.
Nice.
Also, I guess another little tiplet is Xbox One S and X, if it's not today, soon will be on sale, basically for $50 off. I think the Xbox One S bundles are all $50 off, and then on the Xbox One X, you actually don't get $50 off, but you do get a $50 gift card for the Microsoft Store. So it's sort of $50 off.
Sort of.
And then continuing with my Xbox theme for some reason, not really planned, but the app pick of the week is State of Decay 2, which is an Xbox Play Anywhere title. So it's available now for both Xbox One and Windows 10, and you can do the cross-play thing, which is really cool. This is a zombie title. It's like a third-person game where you kill zombies and do that kind of stuff. It's beautiful. I went back and I wasn't sure I had played State of Decay, the original, but I went back and reinstalled it. And then when it started, I was like, oh, yeah. Okay, I played it. So, but it's an Xbox. It's also Xbox One X enhanced. So if you have a 4K set, you will get a nicer graphical presentation as well.
Very nice. Well, if that's all you have for us, I think it's time to switch over and get some real enterprise picks of the week from Mary Jo Foley. Oh, let me turn on our microphone.
Since you're talking about Build.
Yes, I'm sorry. Now we can hear you.
Yeah, this is a pick from Build, one of the many sessions I wanted to go to but didn't have a chance. There was a session at Build called Cognitive Services Speech SDK, which sounds really boring, but it's really interesting what they're doing. Right now, there's no single Microsoft speech service. Different products, different teams all use different speech service, like Microsoft Translator, Cortana, Office, which is doing dictation now. Windows has their own dictation service. None of these things use the same speech mechanism. They all have their own legacy things that they're working with.
Wow.
Microsoft's idea is, hey, what if we have one speech service? and it went across all our products and even went across different platforms. That's what they're building. It's called the Unified Speech Service. And they're just starting now. They've got a couple of the capabilities in there. The idea is to let it do everything like speech to text, text to speech, voice activated assistance, all of it. Just have it be one unified speech service with one SDK, one API, so developers can write to it. And it sounds like they are on their way. I asked a couple of teams what they were doing. I asked Office, hey, are you going to use this thing? And they said, yeah, when it becomes generally available, which will be in a few months, we are going to switch to the Unified Speech Service for dictation in Office. Microsoft Translator also is promising next version will be using this Unified Speech Service. Windows, you know, it's Windows still. They didn't want to say what they're doing. They just gave me some vague statement about, yeah, we know what they said at Build and blah, blah, blah. They didn't say what they're going to do. But probably they, I would guess, are also going to switch to this at some point.
Marching in the same direction, guys. Come on.
Everybody's starting to go all the wood behind one arrow, as Scott McNeely used to like to say. Remember that?
Yeah. I never did like that one.
No, that was never a great one. But yeah, we're all going one way now, at least. So keep your ears and eyes open for the Unified Speech Service. And if you're a developer, look for the SDK, which is in preview now.
Okie dokie. How about a enterprise code name of the week?
Yeah. The code name of the week is Aruba.
Jamaica, girl, yeah. I want to make it. Aruba.
I wish we were in Aruba right now because we've had a very rainy week.
Yeah.
But Aruba, for those of you who are Microsoft codename historians like myself, that codename has been known for a while. We heard it was associated with the next Surface Hub, which now we know is Surface Hub 2. Oh. But what Aruba is specifically, we think, is the composable shell that is going to work on Surface Hub 2. So remember I said earlier in the show, we're moving to this new model of how Windows is built, where you have this Windows Core OS. And then there are these different shells that'll plug into it like a chassis almost. So the one that's specific to the Surface Hub is codenamed Aruba. Hence why it's the pick this week.
Hence why the beach moves. And now I think the Beach Boys are appropriate because it's time for our beer pick of the week.
So, our beer pick of the week would be
down.
Perfect on a beach.
Yes, it would.
It would.
Yes, or anywhere, frankly.
It would. It's from a very famous craft brewery in the United States called Jester King. Jester King is based in Austin, Texas. It's probably one of the most famous craft beer breweries. And they make a lot of amazing things. They now are starting to distribute more broadly, like we're getting it up here now in New York sometimes. And so my pick is one that's available in New York called Jester King Noble King. Wait a minute, it's got so many kings. Jester King Noble King Hoppy Farmhouse Ale. And what this is a Saison / farmhouse ale. You know, Saisons, they kind of have that lighter hop thing going on with more European style hops typically. It is based on a golden ale. It's very effervescent. It's only 5.3% in alcohol, so you could have a couple of them and be okay to walk away from your table or your tablet. And it's just a nice, delicious Saison, a perfect beer for spring, I would say, or on the beach with the Beach Boys.
I love Saisons.
Saisons are great.
I do. I love them. Well, that wraps another fabulous Windows Weekly up for the week. If you've got beer, you know you've got Windows Weekly. That's for sure. Mary Jo Foley writes about Windows every single day, every single hour of every single day, it seems.
Hopefully not.
Well, except for a few hours where she's recharging her HP NVX2. Yeah. You'll find her all about Microsoft. Well, son, you got to recharge sometime. All about Microsoft.com is the website, the ZDNet blog, where she hangs her hat. Paul Thurrott does his thing at Thurrott.com, thurrott.com. His books are at leanpub.com.
including the field guide for Windows 10, newly updated for 1803. And anything else? Is that it? Is that anything you want to talk about? Anything you want to plug?
No. I have a book announcement coming up soon, but I guess I'll save that for next week.
Back to Call of Duty, Paul. Back to Call of Duty. Don't get ambitious.
Do I know about this? Or are you holding it back because I held back my secret?
Yeah. I was going to tell you, but then I learned about your secretive ways.
No, you're not going to tell us. It's
all a secret. It won't be of interest to you.
We do.
Xbox.
Yeah, sounds like
it. It's a book about fluent design.
Sounds like gaming. Yeah, or fluent design.
Right.
One or the other. Or PWAs. Could be any of
the pages are actually going to be transparent, so you can see the next page. It's nice.
We do this show every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. You can watch live at twit.tv/live if you do that. Chat with us, irc.twit.tv. Join the gang in the back of the class, having fun at our expense.
Passing smokes around.
Passing smokes, writing notes, getting in trouble with Teach. You can also... You can also download on-demand audio or video of the show at twit.tv/ww or subscribe in your favorite podcatcher, and that way you'll get every episode automatically. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye.